Hare Krishna. At the very onset of today's discourse, I would like to offer my respectful obeisances unto their lordships, Sri Sri Radha Kalachandaji, along with their eternal associates like Sri Lalita Devi, Sri Vishakha Devi, Sri Ruparati Manjari, etc. And along with that, I would also like to submit my most respectfully prostrated homages unto the lotus feet of their lordships Sri Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Sri Nityananda Prabhu, along with their perpetual entourage such as Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatana Goswami and all the six Goswamis of Sri Dham of Vrindavan. Finally, I would like to pay my obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, Abhaya Charanarvind Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has very nicely and very artistically propagated the doctrine of Krishna consciousness throughout this world in this present modern era in a most unique and fantastic, unprecedented way. Conclusively, I would like to also pay my obeisances unto all the senior Vaishnava devotees present herein, and thereby I would now like to commence our proposed context of discussion, the context of Srila Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, also known as the Nectar of Devotion, compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. So, our discussion on the Nectar of Devotion will continue for next 3 days in the evening time from 7 p.m. up to 9 p.m. And in this discussion, we will endeavor to know in the profound depth as the time permits us. We will try to understand, we will try to comprehend in the profound depth the various different stages of devotional service and the devotional service which is of the unadulterated type itself. So, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, he is the compiler of Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is, in short or in synopsis, known as the Nectar of Devotion. But the literal meaning of every word taken, the literal meaning of every constituent of the whole phrase, if the literal meaning of that is taken, then the detailed or elaborated meaning comes out to be the ocean of the nectarian mellows of devotional love. Sri Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Sindhu means ocean. Amrita means nectar. Rasa means mellow. And bhakti means pure devotion. So the ocean of the mellows of the nectar of pure devotional service. That is what we mean by Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And in the very beginning, in the invocation, Srila Rupa Goswami writes, praying unto the lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna of Vrindavan, who is the lover of Srimati Radharani, praying unto this Shri Krishna of Vrindavan, who is also known as Vrajendra Nandana Shyama Sundara Nandanandan Yashodanandana Shri Krishna Govinda Dev, Srila Rupa Goswami writes, Akhila Rasamrita Murtihi Prasrimara Ruchiruddhataraka Palihi Kalita Shyama Lalita Radha Preyan Vidhur Jayati. Srila Rupa Goswami says, Akhila Rasamrita Murtihi. I bow down unto that Vidhu. Now, here the definition is taken twofold. If the direct apparent definition, if that is taken by using the Mukhyavritti. Mukhyavritti means there are two types of ways. There are two ways of deriving definition from any Sanskrit statement, especially the statement found in poetry or in meterized form. Every statement of Sanskrit language which is found either as poetry or in a meterized form, that statement can be interpreted in two ways. According to the rules of Alankara Shastra, the statement can be interpreted in twofold ways. The first way to interpret the statement is known as Mukhyavritti, and the second way to interpret is known as Lakshanavritti. Lakshanavritti means the secondary definition deriving technique, and Mukhyavritti or Abhidhavritti means the primary definition deriving technique. So Lakshana or Gauni Vritti, the secondary one, if that technique is applied to this present shloka, then the meaning comes out to be in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Shyama Sundar. But if the primary definition deriving technique, Mukhya or Abhidhavritti, is applied to the verse, then this verse certainly is related to describing the Swarupa or the nature of the moon. Because Viduhu means a moon. Akhila rasamrita murtihi prasrimara ruchi ruddhataraka palihi kalita shyama lalito radha prayan vidhur jayati. Jayati means let there be all glory to that moon. What type of moon? Radha prayan viduhu. Viduhu means moon. Let that moon be all glorious. Who is, or all victorious, let that moon be all victorious, who is the whose beloved is the constellation or the nakshatra known as Anuradha. In the sky, we have 27 constellations known as 27 nakshatras. And these constellations are none other than the personifications of the 27 daughters of Prajapati Daksha. Prajapati Daksha had 27 daughters according to the 4th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And those 27 daughters were married and were given to Chandrama, Chandradev, the moon god, by Daksha Prajapati, the father of those 27 daughters. And those 27 daughters then became known as 27 nakshatras or 27 constellations. And these 27 constellations, they appear as stars near the moon, which is the husband of these 27 constellations. So, Shri Krishna is herein compared to a moon. So, according to the primary definition deriving technique, or the apparent vision, or the direct interpretation, we come to the meaning that let there be all glory or all victory to the moon, who is the husband of Anuradha constellation. Among the 27 types, one constellation is known as Anuradha Nakshatra, Anuradha constellation. So let there be all glory to this Anuradha constellation, and let there be all glory to that night wherein the Anuradha constellation is found most near to the moon, and that night falls only once in a year. And that particular night is known as the full moon night of the month of Vaishakh, known as Vaishakhi Purnima. So let there be glory to the moon, who is the husband of this Anuradha constellation, and the moon which appears in its full-fledged form with all its potencies and all its faculties of illumination during the full moon night, during the Paurnamasi Purnima of the month of Vaishakh. This is the meaning. Akhila rasamrita murtihi prasrimara ruchi ruddhataraka palihi kalita shyama lalito radha prayan vidhur jayati. And moon can also be considered to be the embodiment or personification of all rasas or all mellows. Now rasa literally means a juice, a liquid substance which is very relishable, which is very palatable to the tongue, which is to be savored or enjoyed, and which provides bliss upon tasting.
That particular fluid or that particular liquid is known as juice. And that juice is what we meant by rasa here. Rasa literally means juice. But the acharyas of coming from the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have translated rasa as nectarian mellow. So nectarian mellow or nectarian mellow of devotional service is what we mean by bhakti rasa. So akhila means complete in totality. We are not talking about the rasas which rather exist in an incomplete form. We are rather talking about the rasa or the transcendental mellow. We are not talking about mundane mellow. We are talking about the transcendental mellow which rather exists in the supramundane, non-phenomenal, completely transcendental realm. And that is why Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashashyate Om. This is the invocatory mantra of the Ishavasya Upanishad, also known as Sri Ishopanishad of the Krishna Yajurveda. So according to Ishavasya Upanishad, the Supreme Absolute Truth is completely full. And whatever emanations, they emanate from this complete whole or this complete full or this complete aggregate totality, those emanations are also complete by themselves, in themselves. And no matter how many unlimited or innumerable total complete wholes, they come out from this original complete whole. But even then, the original complete whole stays as it is without any scope, without any chance, without any possibility of either reduction or addition in its very nature. And whatever emanations they come out from this reservoir of completeness, of totality, those emanations being complete in total, in themselves, they are also not reduced or cut down. Normally what happens? When you subtract some amount from the original amount which is subtracted, the original amount from which the subtraction is made, that amount also gets reduced from its original state. In the original state, the original amount stays in totality. But when it is reduced, the original amount is also reduced. And the portion which is reduced from the original amount is also less than the original amount. You see, both the original amount, both the original place of reduction and the thing which has been reduced, both become lessened in quantity than their original form. So Shri Krishna is the reservoir. Shri Krishna also does not become reduced. And those emanations which are taken out from Shri Krishna, they also do not become reduced. This is the uniqueness of Shri Krishna's transcendental nature. That is why Srila Rupa Goswami Pad, he uses the word akhila here. Akhila rasamrita murtihi. But now question arises that how can moon be considered the reservoir or the source or the fountain head or the summum bonum of the juicy mellow? Rasa means juicy mellow. So the Vedas have given answer that because moon, by spreading its radiance or by spreading its effulgence in the form of moonshine, and if that radiance falls upon the plants, trees, herbs, bushes and grass of this earthly domain, then those respective items, namely plants, bushes, grass, trees, herbs, etc., they become filled with juicy mellows. And whatever juice or whatever taste which is found in all the leaves, in all the flowers, in all the stems, twigs, branches, and in all the fruits of all the trees, and all different types of herbs, medicinal herbs, whatever juice is found in all these items, that juice originally comes from the moonshine emanating from the moon itself. That is why moon or soma, chandrama, is considered to be the agar, to be the kosh, to be the reservoir of all the mundane juicy mellows.
So, just like mundane moon is a reservoir of all different types of mundane juicy mellows, in the same way, Shri Krishna is also reservoir or personification or embodiment of all the transcendental devotional juicy mellows, bhakti rasa. But now question can arise that Shri Krishna, if the meaning Shri Krishna is taken, then this definition is applicable. But if the meaning moon is taken, if the meaning of this verse in the context of moon is taken, then how this definition can be applicable to Shri Krishna? Because if you change the meaning, if you make vidhu to mean Shri Krishna, then this definition is applicable. But if you do not accept the meaning Krishna, because the primary meaning rejects it, the primary meaning rather states that vidhu means moon. So how Rupa Goswami can be ever talking of a mundane moon here? That is not possible. But if Rupa Goswami is not clarifying, no, he has still clarified. Even if you take the meaning moon here and not the meaning Krishna of the word vidhu, even then Rupa Goswami is not indicating any mundane moon. He is certainly indicating a transcendental moon. And that transcendental moon means no other than Shri Krishna. That is why either the meaning moon is taken, or if the meaning Shri Krishna is taken, they mean the same here. It is not that if the meaning moon is taken, the Rupa Goswami then will be referring to the mundane moon. No. That is not what he's trying to imply or he's trying to denote here. Because he has used the word Akhila. The mundane moon may be the reservoir of rasas, of mellows, but it is not considered the reservoir of all the mellows. And that is why the mundane moon is Khila Rasamrita Murtihi. Khila means incomplete embodiment of mellows. Whereas Shri Krishna is the only transcendental moon who is the embodiment of all complete transcendental mellows. Not partial, not incomplete. And that is why only the moon of the nature of Shri Krishna can be called here Akhila Rasamrita Murtihi, or the one who is the reservoir of all the transcendental nectarian mellows in totality. Akhila Rasamrita Murtihi. So why the mundane moon cannot be considered the reservoir of all different rasas, all different types of juices, palatable juices? The first reason is that rasa or juice here does not only mean the rasa in the form of a liquid. Rasa here also means those enchanting sentiments which entertain the mind in whom the rasa is present and the mind for whom that rasa is present. The Vishaya Vigraha and the Ashraya Vigraha. The Vishayalamban and the Ashrayalamban. Later on, Rupa Goswami will divide the Vibhava category into two divisions. So what do we mean by Ashraya Vigraha? Ashraya Vigraha means the personification of the shelter of the rasa. And Vishaya Vigraha means the object of the rasa. So now we are talking about devotional mellows. So Shri Krishna is both the object of the devotional mellow and his devotees are the shelter of those devotional mellows. But Shri Krishna is also the shelter of all the devotional mellows. Shri Krishna is also the reservoir of all the devotional mellows, but even though he is the reservoir of all the devotional mellows, he still wants to taste those devotional mellows which he himself is the personification of from the devotees. This is the uniqueness about rasa. The devotees, they are the shelter of rasa, they are the reservoir of rasa. But from where the rasa comes into the heart of the devotee? Rasa comes into the heart of devotee, and then Shri Krishna enjoys that rasa which is present within the heart of the devotee. So from where this rasa comes into the heart of the devotee? This is the question which arises. That also comes from Shri Krishna. And that is why the original reservoir of rasa is only Shri Krishna and no one else. Because the Ahaladini Shakti, or the internal pleasure giving transcendental potency of the Lord, whose personification, whose chief personification is
the daughter of Rishabhanu, Srimati Radhika. So that Ahladini Shakti, who is personified by Srimati Radharani, that Ahladini Shakti has one special faculty, known as the faculty of prema or prema bhakti. And this faculty of prema or prema bhakti enters into the heart of a pure devotee of the Lord. And after that, this faculty of prema bhakti enters into the heart of the pure devotee of a Lord, then this faculty of prema bhakti again enchants, attracts, entertains, and fully tries to satisfy the Lord, who is the object of that prema bhakti, who is the vishaya of that prema bhakti. So, transcendental internal potency of the Lord, the pleasure-giving potency, Ahladini Shakti, who is always present within the swarupa, within the internal nature of Shri Krishna, even though she is always present within the internal nature of Shri Krishna from time without beginning, and even though she continues to remain present within the internal nature or swarupa of Shri Krishna, at the same time, simultaneously, she also becomes separated or comes out from the transcendental form of Shri Krishna and starts existing separately. This is what our acharyas have explained. Because without knowing this theory, one will not able to know the whole rasa process. Especially Srila Jiva Goswami Pad, he explains in his sixth sandarbha, known as Shri Priti Sandarbha. Shri Priti Sandarbha is a treatise written by Srila Jiva Goswami explaining the Bhagavat Prema or the unalloyed transcendental love for the lotus feet of the Lord in quite philosophical detail by using the analytical approach. So there Jiva Goswami Pada says that Ahladini Shakti of Shri Krishna, in which way she is connected with Shri Krishna, first this has to be understood. Only then the rasa process will be understood. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu from very beginning starts talking about rasa. Because in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has no other objective than to establish pure devotional service of Shri Krishna on the basis of rasa shastra. Now the question arises that there were many acharyas, even before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even before the appearance and the advent of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. So, all these other acharyas, beginning with Lord Brahma, Lord Narada, Lord Vyasadev, the four Kumaras, Kapil Dev, Rishabh Dev, etc. And all the four acharyas who appeared in the very beginning of Kaliyug, Shri Brahma Rudra Sanakaha Kshiti Pavanaha, Vaishnavanam Chatvaraha Sampradayaha Khalu Vakshyante Shri Brahmarudra Sanakaha Kshiti Pavanaha. This is the shloka of Padma Puran. So Vyasadeva is saying that in Kali Yuga there will be four Vaishnava Sampradayas, beginning with Shri Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya and Kumara Sampradaya. So Shri Sampradaya will be started by Goddess of Fortune Lakshmi Devi Ramadevi, who is the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu. Then Brahma Sampradaya will be commenced by Lord Brahma. Rudra Sampradaya will be started by Lord Shiva. And the Kumara Sampradaya will be begun from the four Kumaras, the sons of Brahma, the lifelong celibates. But these are the four Pravartaka Acharyas or the founder Acharyas of the four Sampradayas or four transcendental preceptorial disciplic successions or preceptorial lineages of Vaishnava Dharma. So these are the four founder acharyas. But these four sampradayas, when they enter Kali Yuga era, when they enter the era of Kali Yuga, at that time these sampradayas start diminishing gradually due to the overpowering influence of Kali Yuga. But then the four acharyas appear in order to again strengthen the basis of these four sampradayas, in order to make these four sampradayas firmly established on firmly stable grounds, four acharyas appear. So, in the Shri Sampradaya, Ramanujacharya appears, who is the incarnation of Lord Lakshmana. Then in Brahma Sampradaya, Shripad Madhvacharya appears, who is Anand Tirth Purna Pragya Madhvacharya, who is the incarnation of Vayudev and Hanuman combined. Vayudev means the wind god and Lord Hanuman combined. Then appears Shri Nimbarkacharya, also known as Shri Nimbaditya Acharya, in the line of the four Kumaras. And this Nimbarkacharya is the incarnation of the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord. And then appears Shri Vishnu Swami and also Shri Vallabhacharya, who are respectively the incarnation of the Kaustubha Jewel of the Lord. These are the four Vaishnava Sampradaya Acharyas. So now the question arises that apart from these Vaishnava Acharyas and apart from the Acharyas of previous Yugas like Narada Muni, Vyasa Muni, four Kumaras, Parashar, etc. and all the other 12 Mahajanas, Bhishma, Bali, Vyas, Shukadev Goswami, Yamaraj, and all the 12 Mahajanas, as their names have been quite elaborately mentioned in the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam during the incident of Ajamil. So all these 12 Mahajanas, including the four Vaishnava Acharyas who appeared in Kali Yuga, and sages like Vyasadeva, Gargacharya, Shandilya, Narada, etc. Because Narada has written Narada Bhakti Sutra or the treatise comprising of 84 aphorisms describing the devotional path. This is what Narada Mahamuni has compiled. Then Shandilya, who is the disciple of Gargacharya. And who is Gargacharya? Gargacharya is the Kulpurohit. He is the family priest of all the Yaduvanshis, especially Vasudev and Devaki. And that is why Vasudev and Devaki have sent Gargacharya to Gokul Mahavan for performing the Namakarana Sanskar, name-giving ceremony of the two childs, Krishna and Balram. And this incident has been mentioned in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Gargacharya is the disciple of Lord Vyasadeva, because in the very beginning of Sri Garga Sanghita, which is a book written by Sri Gargacharya or Garga Muni, and in the very beginning of this book, actually this book is dedicated and it serves as an exposition or it serves as a vivid description to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is explained in much more detail by Gargacharya in his book Garga Sanghita. And Gargacharya is the direct disciple of Lord Vyasadeva. Because in the very invocatory verse of the Garga Sanghita, he makes his prayers unto Badri Vanaviharaha, unto that Vyasadeva who is a Satyavati Sut, who is the son of Satyavati and Parashar, and who always roams about, who always traverses across the deep forests and groves of Badrikashram. So he is the disciple of Vyasadeva. And Gargacharya's disciple is Shandilya Muni. So Shandilya has also compiled a book known as Shandilya Bhakti Sutra, which is almost like the Narada Bhakti Sutra. And in this book, Shandilya Muni has written 100 aphorisms or 100 sutras explaining devotional path. So Narada Muni has written Narada Bhakti Sutra, Shandilya has written Shandilya Bhakti Sutra. Then Lord Vyasadeva has also explained bhakti or devotional service in all the scriptures compiled by him, like Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning with Srimad Bhagavatam, the other 17 Puranas, Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra, the 108 Upanishads and the 4 Vedas, all of which have been compiled by Lord Vyasadeva. Then other Acharyas like Shankaracharya, he also talks about bhakti, although he is not the Acharya of Bhakti Marg, although he is not the preceptor of the path of devotion. He is rather the preceptor of the path of speculative knowledge leading to impersonal liberation, Jnana Marg. But still he talks about bhakti sometimes in his books. As if in the case of Govindashtakam, he says, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Govindam Bhaja Mudhamate, Samprapte Sannihite Marane, Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukring Karane. So he talks about serving the lotus feet of Lord Govinda, although in the interpretation of Shankaracharya, bhakti is subordinate to jnan. And what is the ultimate result of jnan? That is liberation. Actually, according to the thinking of Shankaracharya, although he has also explained bhakti in many of his scriptures, in many of his books written by him, but he explains bhakti as subordinate to jnana. Jnana here does not mean shastra jnana or the scriptural knowledge. No. When we talk about jnana marg, that is different from shastra jnana. Shastra jnana means scriptural knowledge. That is part of devotional service, bhakti. Because without having knowledge of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and all these other related scriptures, one can never enhance his progress on the path of pure devotion. So, sambandh jnana or the knowledge of the relationship existing between the living entity and Shri Krishna is absolutely essential and required on the part of a devotee or on the part of a practitioner of devotion in order for him to progress on the path. But we are not talking about this Shastra Jnana. We are talking about Jnana Marg. Jnana Marg means the path of impersonal monistic knowledge leading to impersonal liberation, leading to merging in the impersonal Brahman. This is known as Jnana Marg. So Jnana Marg is considered sadhan or a means or an instrument or sadhan by Shankaracharya. And even the Vaishnava Acharyas, they also consider Jnana Marg just to be sadhan and not to be sadhya. Sadhya means the goal to be attained. Sadhana means the means of approach in order to obtain the determined goal, the fixed goal. In order to obtain the fixed goal, the path that one takes or the means of approach that one takes, that is known as marga, jnana marga. So, the path of approach that one takes in order to obtain the result of impersonal liberation is known as jnana marga. So, jnana marga is just a path. It is just means. It is not the final goal. The final goal of jnanis is to merge into the impersonal liberation. Brahma Sayujya Mukti, also known as sometimes as Kaivalya and sometimes as Tadatmya or Aikatmya Mukti. They all mean the same. These are all synonymous words. Tadatmya, Aikatmya Mukti, Kaivalya or Brahma Sayujya. They all mean the same, merging into the impersonal absolute truth or Brahman. Nirvishesh Brahman. So, Jnana Marg is the path which leads to this impersonal Brahman realization and also merging into this, resulting in the final Brahma Sayujya Mukti. But according to Shankaracharya, since the support or help of bhakti is required, the assistance of bhakti is required by Jnana Marg, in order for the Jnana Marg to give its result, that is liberation, that is why bhakti or devotional service should also be performed in at least some amount along with the practice of Jnana Marg in order for a jnani to obtain liberation. This is what Shankaracharya believes. And that is why he advocates the performance of bhakti, and that is why sometimes he is found speaking on bhakti. His normal trend, his normal mood is to speak on Jnana Marg, Mukti and Nirvishesh Brahman, these three things. But sometimes he also speaks on bhakti, because without bhakti, Jnana Marg cannot give any result. What to speak of Jnana Marg? Any other path like Nishkam Karma, unmotivated action, Sakam Karma, motivated action, Ashtang Yoga, Eightfold Mystic Process, Sankhya, etc. None of these paths can bestow liberation onto their practitioners without taking even slightest assistance from Bhakti Marg. And that is why whenever Shankaracharya is found speaking of bhakti, he considers bhakti just to be an assistant of jnana. He thinks jnana is the primary means of obtaining liberation. Bhakti is secondary means of obtaining liberation. Bhakti is just assisting jnana in order to obtain liberation. Both are sadhan. None of them are sadhya. Jnana marg is also sadhan. Bhakti marg is also sadhan. They are only the means. They are not the goal. The goal is liberation or mukti. This is what Shankaracharya thinks. And even though bhakti is a sadhan, it is secondary sadhan. Gyan is primary sadhan. Bhakti is needed just to assist gyan. So it stays subordinate to gyan. So bhakti is first considered sadhan by Shankaracharya. And secondly, he considers bhakti not to be primary sadhan, rather to be secondary sadhan. So he has put bhakti not only inferior to jnana, mukti or liberation, but also inferior to jnana. According to Shankaracharya, bhakti is not only inferior to mukti, because mukti is the final goal. The means which leads to final goal is certainly inferior than the final goal. The path which leads to a particular destination is of no use once the destination is reached. So if liberation is had, or if liberation is obtained, or if liberation or emancipation is reached, then there is no need of the paths of jnana and bhakti. They are useless now. They are futile. The goal has been obtained. Now what's the use of following and sticking to those paths and adhering to the rules and regulations and prohibitions respectively found within those different paths? There is no use, absolutely. There is no necessity. And that is why Shankaracharya, he considers these two, jnana and bhakti, only to be the paths, not to be the final goal. So, because he does not consider them to be the final goal, he considers both jnana and bhakti to be inferior than mukti or liberation, which is the final goal. So, Shankaracharya considers bhakti to be inferior than mukti. This is the first point I want to make here. Because he considers them to be path and not the goal. Second point is, he again makes bhakti inferior second time by stating that jnana is the primary means and bhakti is the secondary means, again subordinate to jnana. So he makes bhakti not only subordinate to liberation but also subordinate to jnana. So he makes bhakti inferior in two ways. Now what's the actual position of bhakti? The actual position of bhakti, as Lord Shri Krishna himself states in Bhagavad Gita, is Bhaktya Mam Abhijanati. Because we are talking about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. First, let us know about the glories of devotional service, and let us know the difference between the devotional service which has been propounded by Srila Rupa Goswami and the devotional service or services which have been propounded by other acharyas. And first let us start with Shankaracharya. First let us compare Shankaracharya with Rupa Goswami. Then we will compare Ramanuj, Madhva, Vishnu Swami and Nimbark with Rupa Goswami. And then we will find the uniqueness of Srila Rupa Goswami and the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What contribution have they given? What contribution have the followers of Sriman Mahaprabhu given to the devotional domain, to the devotional realm? What contribution was lacking before that they have added? And that will prove the unique speciality or the unique status or the unique unprecedented position of Srila Rupa Goswami and his treatise Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We have to differentiate between all the different books and treatises written on bhakti by all the previous acharyas and all the previous rishis and maharshis with that of Rupa Goswami's treatise Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So Shankaracharya, he makes bhakti inferior twofold by considering it either subordinate to mukti or liberation, and then inferior to liberation, and then also inferior to jnana marg. Two ways he makes bhakti inferior. Even though he explains bhakti, bhajagovindam, 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 mudamate, he makes it inferior to these above two superior things which are above bhakti, according to his conception. Now what is the real position of bhakti? And is that real position of bhakti matching with the explanation of Shankaracharya? And is that real position of bhakti matching with the interpretation of Srila Rupa Goswami? That we will see. So Shastras are the one who judge which Acharya is making mystic or which Acharya is propounding faulty philosophy. That is what the Shastras, who are the benign authority, they decide. Because the Lord Shri Krishna has stated in the end of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Daivasura Sampad Vibhaga Yoga, the chapter which describes both the demonic qualities and the saintly godly attributes. So in the last verse of that chapter, or the two last verses, Shri Krishna says,
Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavasthitau Utpatha Pratipannasya Parityago Vidhiyati Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavasthitau.
And then he says that one who does not follow the path of Shastra, Na Siddhim Na Sukham Na Param Gatim, he never gets any bliss, any happiness. He never reaches his destination or goal. He never experiences any happiness. And, yes, these three things. He never reaches any final destination. Na param gatim. He never reaches his goal, his objective, his aim, his target. Na param gatim. He never reaches any perfection. Na siddhim. And he never experiences any happiness. Na sukham. Na sukham, na siddhim, na param gatim. Who never experiences or reaches all these things? The one who does not follow the method or the process as prescribed, as injuncted, and as laid down by the Shastras. That person.
Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karyakari Vyavasthitau.
And therefore, Lord Shri Krishna says that now, therefore, Tasmat, Tasmat means therefore, I am making my final opinion clear to all the practitioners of Dharma, Vedic Dharma, that if they want to actually attain final destination without any impediment, without any hindrance, without any obstacle or problem, then they should follow the Shastra Vidhi, the process laid down in the scriptures. Because the scriptures are the sole evidence to prove what ought to be done and what ought not to be done. Karya, akarya, vyavasthitau. Karya means what is ought to be done. Akarya means what is not to be done. Shastras are the one who make us know, who make us acquaint, who acknowledge us about what ought to be done and what ought not to be done. And that is why, according to the Shastras, and which Shastra is the supermost type of Shastra? Certainly Srimad Bhagavatam. Not even 108 Upanishads, not even 4 Vedas, not even 17 Puranas, not even Mahabharata, Vishnu Sahasranam or Srimad Bhagavad Gita, not even the Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra, but only Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest type of evidence, which can give uncontaminated knowledge. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam is the most pure form of evidence, Pramana. And evidence is the source of knowledge. Pramana is the source of Prameya. Prameya means knowledge, transcendental spiritual knowledge. And Pramana means the source from where this transcendental knowledge emanates. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Pramana Mamalam, Prema Pumartho Mahan. As it has been described by Srinath Chakravarti Pad in the beginning of his Chaitanya Mat Manjusha commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajeshatanayah Taddhama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachidupasana Vrajavadhu Vargenaya Kalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramana Mamalam Prema Pumartho Mahan Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhur Matamidam Tatra Darona Paraha.
Srimad Bhagavatam is the most unadulterated type of evidence. It does not have least contamination within itself. As is what is the case with all the other scriptures. With the other scriptures, they have little contamination. What kind of contamination they have? They have contamination in the form of dharma or so-called occasional and daily religious activities which aim at either sense enjoyment or liberation. Nitya and naimittik karma, so-called daily and occasional duties which aim either at sense enjoyment or liberation. those nitya naimittik karmas like sandhya vandan, trikal snan, agnihotra, panch yagya, panch mahayagya, they are all known as dharma. Dharma means following the prescribed duties of varnas and ashramas. There are four varnas and four ashramas. Following the prescribed duty of each varna and each ashrama in which a particular person is situated within, that is known as dharma. But dharma also means performing daily and occasional duties like sandhya vandan, three times chanting Gayatri mantra. Now this sandhya vandan is not the same thing as we, the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, do. Our sandhya vandan is part of sadhan bhakti. We are talking about the sandhya vandanam that has been mentioned in the Vedas and Puranas. And that sandhya vandan has two goals. If that sandhya vandanam is performed in a motivated way, it bestows sense enjoyment, either earthly or heavenly. Parthiya sukbhog or swargiya sukbhog. Heavenly sense enjoyment, the sense enjoyment which is found in paradise, in celestial domain, or the earthly sense enjoyment. But if the sandhya vandanam is performed without any motive, then it destroys all the vices, all the sins, and avoids liberation, but does not avoid prema bhakti, or the unalloyed transcendental love for the lotus feet of the Lord. This is what sandhya vandanam does. So three times chanting the Brahma Gayatri mantra, or and the other mantras mentioned in the Vedas, in three different phases or times of a day, midday, morning and evening, are known as the sandhya vandana rites or rituals. Then come the naimittika duties, the naimittika samskaras, occasional. Nitya means daily duty. So sandhya vandanam is daily duty. So also agnihotra. Agnihotra is also required, it is also considered mandatory or compulsory by all those who are residing within grihastha ashrama or the household life. The Vedas mention that if a grihastha does not perform agnihotra, then he is liable and then he is certainly and surely to be considered vicious and sinful. He loses his piety and his pious deeds and merits if he does not perform sandhya vandanam. This is what the Vedas say. Fault is incurred upon those who do not perform sandhya vandana. Fault is incurred upon those. So sandhya vandanam, the Vedas say that they are mandatory to be performed. There can be no option in performing in their performance. There can be no option given. They are without any option. They have to be performed without any excuse or pretext. So they are considered daily duties, nitya karma. Naimittika karma are occasional duties which are not performed every day, but which are rather to be performed when certain particular time arises. When particular period comes, then they are to be performed. Like there are 16 samskaras, shodash samskaras, throughout the life of a civilized human being following the Vedic dharma, throughout the life of an Aryan. Aryan means a civilized human being following the Varnashrama system. Throughout the life of any Aryan, the 16 samskaras, they come from time to time. Beginning with Garbhadana samskar. What is Garbhadana samskar? The ceremony of impregnation, the ceremony of conception. That is also a ceremony. The Vedas and the Puranas give in detail the process describing how the impregnation shall be done. How many yagyas, how many mantras have to be chanted at the time and before the impregnation process, and there is detailed information is given what time, what place this act should be done. So Garbhadana samskar. And beginning from Garbhadana samskar, then comes Jata Karma samskar, when the child is born, what rituals have to be done. Then comes Namkaran, the name giving ceremony. Then comes Karana Ved Chudakaran samskar, earrings ceremony. Then comes Yagyopavita Upanayana samskaram, when the Brahmana boy reaches the age of 5, when a Brahmana boy reaches the age of 8, Kshatriya boy reaches the age of 12, and Vaishya boy reaches the age of 15, at that time, their Upanayana samskara has to be performed, the thread giving ceremony, by the kul guru, by the family priest, who gives only Brahma Gayatri mantra, not the other mantras. And this Brahma Gayatri Mantra, which this school guru, which this family priest, Vyavaharik Guru, Jiva Goswami says Vyavaharik Guru. There are two types of spiritual masters. Actually, there are two types of masters. Only the Paramarthik Guru can be called spiritual master. The Laukik Guru or Vyavaharik Guru is the guru who performs Upanayana Samskar. This Upanayana Samskar is not the same thing as the second initiation, as the Brahmana or Gayatri Diksha. Because our Diksha not only includes Brahma Gayatri, it includes the other Pancharatrika mantras of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Radha Krishna, and of our Guru, etc. So, and even if we have the Brahma Gayatri mantra, we do not have it in the same way as the Brahma Gayatri mantra is given during the Upanayana Samskar. The Brahma Gayatri mantra which is given during the Upanayana Samskar, because Upanayana Samskar is essential for entering into the study of the Vedas. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are allowed, are permitted to study the Vedas. And the Shudras are not allowed. And also the women are not allowed. Stri Shudra Dvija Bandhunam Traina Shruti Gochara. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 7th Chapter says. That the women, the Shudras, 4th class men and the friends, kith and kin of Brahman, Kshatriya and Vaishya, who are just born in the family of Brahman, Kshatriya and Vaishyas, but who do not have proper qualifications. They are known as Brahma Bandhus or Dvija Bandhus, like Ashwatthama. They are also not eligible to study the Vedas. So, the Brahmana, Kshatriya and Vaishyas are eligible to study the Vedas, but not by default, not by their very birth. Actually, at the time of birth, any child, may he be born in a Brahmana family, even that child is considered Shudra by birth. That is what the Shastras have stated, Janmana Jayate Shudraha. By birth, every child, be the child of Mlecha Yavan cow eater, be the child of a high class Brahmana, he is considered Shudra at the time of birth. After the Upanayana Samskar takes place, he becomes qualified to study the Vedas. Before that, he is still known as Shudra. No, actually it is said that at the time of birth, he is known as Shudra. Even if he may be the child of a Brahmana, he is known as Shudra after birth. As long as the samskaras are not performed, beginning with Namkarana Samskar or the name giving ceremony, Annaprashan Samskar or the food giving ceremony. If these samskaras are not performed after birth, then the child is still considered to be Shudra child, even though he is born in a Brahmana family. He becomes Brahmana by passing through these samskaras like Annaprashan and Namkarana. Then, still he does not become eligible to study the Vedas as long as he does not have the Upanayana Samskara done for himself, or the thread giving ceremony and the Brahma Gayatri mantra giving ceremony. And even after studying the Vedas, even after this Upanayana Samskara is done, he is not eligible to perform yajna. Even though he may be the child of a Brahmana, and even though his Upanayana Samskara is done, he is not eligible to perform any type of sacrifice or yajna as long as he does not study the Vedas and the specific portion of those Vedas which deal with the detailed process of the performance of different yajnas. Yes, this is the Shastra Vidhi. So Nitya and Naimittika. Naimittika Karma means these 16 samskaras. Samskaras means those activities which make human being perfect. Samskritam iti samskaraha. And Vivaha Samskar, marriage ceremony, is also one of the 16. And at last comes Antyeshti or Dah Samskar, Agni Samskar. That is the samskar which is performed, that is known as the funeral ceremony. So that's the last samskar. So these 16 samskaras are known as occasional duties. And then there are Nitya Karmas, or the daily chanting of Brahma Gayatri and Sandhya Vandan mantras. But these mantras have only goal of liberation if they are performed unmotivatingly, And they can give sense enjoyment if they are performed in a motivated way. But they cannot avoid prema bhakti or the transcendental service to the Lord in his eternal spiritual world. These sandhyavan, these occasional and daily activities cannot avoid that. And even that Brahma Gayatri mantra, which appears to be literally same as the Brahma Gayatri mantra given in the Vaishnavi Diksha. Vaishnavi Diksha or the second initiation, we also get Brahma Gayatri mantra from our Guru. But that Brahma Gayatri mantra, although it may appear the same, literally, but it has a lot of difference. When a Vyavaharika Guru, when the family priest, he initiates a Brahmana child or a Kshatriya child or a Vaishya child into the chanting of Brahma Gayatri mantra, that Brahma Gayatri has a different meaning. That Brahma Gayatri is given to the child just to make him eligible to study the Vedas and perform Karmakand and perform Yajna. And that Brahma Gayatri is just given to make him liberated and make his sins vanquished. And even the meaning of that Brahma Gayatri mantra, which the priest tells the student, the Vyavaharik Guru tells his Shishya, is not the same meaning as the spiritual master or the Paramarthika Guru when he tells the meaning of Brahma Gayatri mantra during the Vaishnavi Diksha, during the second initiation ceremony of the devotional line. Because here we have a completely different meaning of the same Brahma Gayatri mantra. According to the Agni Puran, Vyasadeva has clarified the meaning of Brahma Gayatri mantra in Agni Puran, and Jiva Goswami has written a special book dedicated for explaining the in-depth meaning of the Brahma Gayatri mantra. And both of them, Vyasadeva and Jiva Goswami, they are explaining Brahma Gayatri mantra in pure devotional terms in relation to Sri Radha and Krishna of Vrindavan. But the meaning of Brahma Gayatri mantra, which is imparted by a Vyavaharika Guru, by a family priest unto his Upanayana disciple, is not in relation to Radha Krishna, is not in relation to pure devotional line, but it is rather just to drive away the sins and avoid liberation at most. That's the maximum meaning which is given to the student at that time by the family priest. So these two things are not the same. This diksha process and this Upanayan Samskar are not the same, even though they may have the same Brahma Gayatri mantra. So these are known as Nitya and Naimittika karmas, daily and occasional duties, along with the Varnashrama Dharma, the prescribed duties of four Varnas and Ashramas, along with Agnihotra. A Grihastha, it is considered compulsory for him to perform Agnihotra, a special type of fire sacrifice every day. And along with that fire sacrifice, it is also considered very essential for him to perform other four types of sacrifices, like Pitri Yajna or forefather, sacrifice of forefather. What does Pitri Yajna mean? Pitri Yajna means giving oblations to the forefathers by calling their names with little water in the hand, giving oblations every day to the forefathers. Shraddha or Tarpana Kriya. That is known as Pitri Yajna. Deva Yajna means performing Agnihotra, giving oblations in the fire with ghee. Ghee as an oblation, clarified butter as an oblation, giving those oblations into fire to satisfy the demigods like Indra, Charuna, Indra, Varuna, Chandra, etc. That is known as Deva Yajna. Deva Yajna, Pitri Yajna. Demigod sacrifice, forefather sacrifice. Then comes Rishi Yajna. Rishi Yajna means Swadhyaya, studying of the Vedas. Then comes Bhuta Yajna. Bhuta Yajna means satisfying different living entities, especially those found in the lower species, like satisfying hungry and thirsty birds and animals. That is known as Bhuta Yajna. By giving, before eating, giving some food and some eatables and some foods and drinks to those animals and birds living nearby our house. That is known as Bhuta Yajna. And then the fifth is known as Nri Yajna. Nri Yajna means satisfying human beings. Especially it is mentioned in the Vedas that before that one starts eating food, one has to call, one has to go outside his house and he has to call loudly by yelling, by screaming, that if any person who is nearby my house, who has no opportunity of eating food, if that person wants to eat food and if he is thirsty and hungry, he can come to my house and he can be sumptuously satisfied by the eatables that I have prepared in my house. This is what the Grihastha has to do according to the Vedas every day. So the five types of yajnas, but these are all known as dharma. Then come artha. Then comes artha. Artha means that economic, financial, monetary development which comes as a result of performing these different religious activities or dharma. The financial improvement, the financial prosperity which comes as a result of the performance of the dharma which we have already discussed, that financial prosperity is known as artha. But the financial prosperity which comes by performing different types of sinful activities or by not performing the dharma as prescribed in the Veda, those financial prosperities are not known as artha here. Whenever we are talking about artha or financial economic development, that artha means the artha which is begotten from the performance of dharma. It is not the artha which is begotten by unfair means, by performing sinful activities, or by not following the varnashram. That is not at all considered dharma. We do not even discuss about that type of financial improvement. So dharma and artha. Then comes kama. Kama means sense gratification. Gratification of the senses. Especially when the senses, they combine, they conjunct, they meet with the objects of them. With the objects of themselves. Means with the objects of the senses. When the senses, they combine with, when they unite with the objects of senses. Indriya, when the indriyas or senses, when they combine with their tanmatras. Then that conjunction, that sparsha, that union between the senses and their objects is known as sense gratification. Matra sparshastu kaunteya. Shitoshna sukadukhadaha. Agama payino anityastam statikshasva bharata. This is what the Lord has told in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun. That is sense gratification. Five types of knowledge acquiring senses, jnanendriyas, panch jnanendriya, and five types of action performing senses, panch karmendriya. When these 10 senses, along with the mind, the 11th inner sense, subtle sense, sukshma indriya, when these 11 senses, they come and unite with their objects, then that act of union or unification is known as sense enjoyment. And this sense enjoyment is not the sense enjoyment which is done, which is accomplished, executed by unfair means, by irreligious means, by not following and by disobeying the rules and regulations of the Shastra. That sense enjoyment is not considered kaam by the Shastra. Whenever the Shastras talk about kaam as the third purusharatha, as the third goal of human life, the first is dharma, second is artha, third is kaam. Then they are talking about the kaam which arises out of that artha, which in turn arises out of dharma. There is karya karan bhav. There is karya karan bhav. There is cause and effect relation between each successive stage with its preceding stage. The successive stage is kaam. Successive stage is kaam. Kaam is effect and artha is the cause. That's the relation. Artha is effect and dharma is the cause. Each successive stage has cause and effect relationship with its preceding stage. So kaam here means that sense gratification which is done by following the Shastra Vidhi. And that sense gratification which arises out of that financial prosperity, because sense gratification cannot arise without financial prosperity. In the stage of poverty, in poverty-stricken condition, in the status of a pauper, sense gratification cannot arise. So sense gratification naturally needs financial prosperity. But that sense gratification, which not only follows the rules of the Shastras, especially the Dharma Shastras, like Manusmriti, Yajnavalkya Smriti, Harita Smriti, etc., but that sense gratification which also comes as a result of that artha or that financial prosperity which is
obtained by the performance of dharma, only that sense gratification is known as kama by the shastra, not the other sense gratification. And then comes moksha. Moksha means when person or the practitioner of all these fruitive actions, when he becomes fed up by enjoying senses, by enjoying his senses in many different ways, when he becomes fed up, when he becomes completely tired of enjoying his senses, and when he realizes that actually the senses can never be satisfied, the more that we try to enjoy our senses, the more that they become dissatisfied, and then the more they divide the propensities of mind, intellect, etc. And that is why the intellect becomes divided and into many different fractions, into many different propensities, and the intelligence cannot stay united, and that intelligence by Lord is known as avyavasayatmika buddhihi by Lord Shri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Vyavasayatmika buddhihi ekeha kuru nandana bahushakhahi anantascha buddhayo avyavasayinam. Those whose intelligence is divided are those fruitive actors who perform every activity, subtle or gross, just for getting some fruitive result. So dharma, artha and kam means pravritti marg, means the path of sense enjoyment. And moksha, the fourth goal of human life, chaturth purushart, is known as the path of detachment or retirement from this material world, the path that leads that is the path of liberation, not the path of bondage. Path of bondage, pravritti marg, is dharma, artha and kam. But when one realizes that kam, actually dharma is performed to obtain kam, and artha is also acquired, accumulated to obtain the position of kama tripti. Kama tripti means enjoying the senses. Enjoying the senses, this is the real goal of pravritti marg. This is the real goal. But in order to reach or ascend onto this level of pravritti marg, one has to systematically and chronologically, in a sequential order, progress through the preliminary stages, through the fundamental basic stages of dharma and artha. But dharma and artha are not goals by themselves. They are relative goals. The ultimate goal of pravritti marg is kam. Dharma and artha are only relative goals of pravritti marg. They are not the ultimate goals. The ultimate goal of pravritti marg is kam. But when one experiences that kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhavah mahashano mahapapmang vidyenamiha vairinam jnanino nitya vairina. Lord Krishna makes his statement two times clear in Bhagavad Gita in two different ways. He says that this kama, which arises out of rajoguna or the mode of passion, this lust, this act of sense gratification which arises out of mode of passion, is never going to be fulfilled. Why? Mahashanaha. Because it has a big stomach, like an elephant, or even more bigger than an elephant. It has such a big stomach that it is never going to be satisfied. Rather, the more we try to satisfy this lust by supplying more wood, just like supplying more wood in a fire, the fire becomes more and more enlarged. In the same way, by supplying more sense gratification, the lust increases. The desires of enjoyment, they increase. And then they make the mind and intelligence go bewildered. They make the mind and intelligence divided into many parts. They actually make the mind and intelligence completely unstable, being harassed by different desires of sense enjoyment. And this is to be practically realized. There is no question of argumentation with the Shastra. There is no question of challenging with the Shastra. And if somebody wants to challenge, then we are here to answer them properly. So, kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhavah mahashano mahapapma vidhyenamiha vairinam. And this kama or this lust is the eternal enemy, is the eternal foe of
jnani. It is also eternal foe of a bhakta, devotee. But it is more importantly, or more, it is eternal foe more seriously for a jnani than a bhakta. Because what happens is bhakta can subdue the kaam easily. Vishaya vini vartante niraharasya dehinaha. Rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. Devotee can subdue the lust very easily by experiencing the higher taste in the form of devotional service. And devotional service, the uniqueness about it is that it is palatable both at the stage of sadhan and both at the stage of sadhya. Devotional service is found in two stages, in the stage of sadhan and sadhya. This is not what Shankaracharya accepts. He accepts bhakti only to be on the stage of sadhan and not to be sadhya. But according to Vaishnava conception, according to the conception of Srila Rupa Goswami, he accepts bhakti to be both sadhya and sadhan, to be both the goal and the means of that goal. So, in the Vaishnava line of thought, bhakti is palatable not only when it is sadhya rupa, not only in its perfected stage, but it is also palatable in the stage of practice, sadhan avastha, sadhan bhakti. It is palatable in both the stages. But that is not the case with Jnanamarg. Since Jnanamarg is very dry and very pain-giving, that is what Arjuna has asked in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that who is superior? Those who are vyakta chetasa or avyakta chetasa? Those who are attached to the unmanifest Brahman through the Jnanamarg process, or those who are attached to the manifest personal form of yours through the Bhakti Marg process? Lord says, certainly, those who are devotees are better. But regarding impersonalists, he considers them rascals and fools by saying, klesho adhikaraste sham, avyakta asakta chetasam, avyakta hi gatir dukkham dehavadbir vapyate. Klesho adhikaraste sham. Jnanis, every step of their severe austerity and penance, they experience pangs of miseries and pains. Klesho adhikarhate sham. Because in Jnanamarg, the sadhan is not relishable at all. Only mukti or sadhya is somewhat relishable, but not the sadhan. But in Bhakti Marg, both the sadhan and sadhya are relishable. So vishaya vini vartante. So for a devotee, because he receives higher taste even on the stage of sadhan, that is why for him, kaam is not very big enemy. He can very easily subdue kaam if he follows the process properly without committing offenses. But for a jnani, the process is not very easy and he does not get any enjoyment at this in the process of attaining liberation in the sadhana avastha. And that is why he is very prone. He is very often prone to become attached to sense gratification. Because the sadhana of Jnanamarg does not immediately bestow the result of mukti or liberation. It takes not only many years, sometimes many lifetimes. Adi Shankaracharya says that even for once, he says in Vivek Chudamani, that even for once, if the thought comes in the mind of a jnani, that I am not the soul, I am the body, and that I am the enjoyer of this material world and all these senses, even if once this thought comes, whole Jnanamarg's process has to be started from over. From the point where he actually started in the very beginning. Whatever progress he makes so far becomes completely null and void. Even if once the thought comes or arises in the Jnanamarg. This is how difficult it is. And because this Jnanamarg is so time-taking process, because Maya Shakti of the Lord, external potency is not... she is a very tough boss. You cannot pass her just in one stroke. You will be failed many times in the examination and then you will gradually start succeeding. But in Jnanamarg, the whole process starts from the very beginning. Each time the thought of bodily conception arises. So, and also not only the thought of bodily conception, Shankaracharya says, even if the thought that I am not the absolute impersonal Brahman, but I am something different from the absolute impersonal Brahman. Even if this thought arises, then the whole Jnana Marg process has to be started from all over. Now, in order to make a Jnani firmly fixed in the thought that I am none other than the impersonal absolute Brahman, this is not very practical and very easy for him, because it is not reality. That is why the mind does not want to accept that all the living entities are the one and the same as myself. Because as soon as Jnani meets, as soon as a person following Jnana Marga meets his friend, he starts thinking that the friend whom he is talking with is different person from him. He does not consider the theory of Advaitavad, monism, at that time. Because that's the natural law of the material world. Whenever you start reciprocating with anyone, you will start feeling difference. That person is different from you. But Shankaracharya says, even if once the thought comes that you are different from either the other living entities or that you are different from the impersonal Brahman, because he considers all the living entities to be the same as impersonal Brahman. So if the thought comes that either you are different from living entities or that you are different from the impersonal Brahman, or if the other living entities are different from impersonal Brahman, any of the three thoughts, if they come in the mind, the whole Jnana Marga process has to be started from all over, not only the bodily conception. So how difficult it is. So Jnana Marga is certainly not enjoyable at the time of sadhana, at this time of practice. Jnana Marga may be considered enjoyable when Jnana Marga is performed with some bhakti as an assistant. But then that enjoyment is really coming from bhakti. It is not coming from Jnana then, if you accept it like that. But on its own, Jnana Marga cannot give any enjoyment, at least on the stage of sadhana. The fruit of it, mukti, can give enjoyment, but not the sadhana stage. And that is why kama or sense gratification is the greatest enemy of jnani and not the greatest enemy for the devotee. The greatest enemy for the devotee is the propensity for performing offenses. Nama prad, dhamma prad, seva prad, and Bhagavad Aparad. Nama Aparad, offenses unto the holy name tenfold. Seva Aparad, offenses unto the deity form of the Lord while worshipping. Archan Marg, 32 fold. Dham Aparad, offenses unto the holy places which are related to the pastimes of the Lord. Tenfold Dham Aparad. Dham Aparad is tenfold, like spitting in the Dham, etc. And Vaishnava Aparad, offenses unto the pure devotees, sixfold. So, these four types of Aparadhas, Dham Aparad, Nam Aparad, Seva Aparad, and Vaishnava Aparad, the propensity of performing them is the greatest enemy for a devotee. But for Jnani, propensity to again fall down into sense enjoyment is the greatest enemy. So, Jnani no Nitya Vairina. Krishna says, lust and sense gratification are the eternal enemies for the Jnani. So this sense gratification, when one understands that the lust can never be satisfied, rather it increases, rather it magnifies, the more we try to enjoy the senses, the lust increases and makes our mind and intellect completely instable, then person turns towards liberation or mukti. He becomes fed up by enjoying his senses for many lifetimes, and only a fortunate person, he turns his face towards the path of liberation, mukti, the fourth goal, chaturth purushartha. But this mukti means atyantiki dukha nivrittihi. This liberation means totally terminating forever the possibility of experiencing any material mundane pain. That is known as mukti. According to Jnana Marga, mukti means completely aborting and terminating and stopping the experience of all mundane pains and pleasures. This is what mukti means, liberation means, according to Jnana Marga. So Jnanis, they don't want transcendental pleasure. They are only aspiring after seizing the material happiness and seizing the material distress. They don't aspire after any transcendental happiness. They think only the cessation of material happiness and material distress is liberation. So their definition of liberation does not include transcendental pleasure actually. So this is known as Mukti Moksha or the fourth Purusharth. But Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects the idea of all these four Purusharthas in totality. In slightest, it rejects. It is not even willing to accept, even slightly, the discussion of Dharma, Arth, Kama and Moksha. And that is why Bhagavatam is exclusive of these four so-called goals of human life. It is not inclusive of them. And from wherein it is substantiated? From the second verse of the first chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this point, this theme gets highlighted, gets stressed upon and gets illuminated by the verse Dharma Projita Kaita Vatra Parama Nirmat Saranam Satam Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadam Tapatra Yon Mulanam Srimad Bhagavatam Mahamunikrite Kimva Parairishvaraha Sadhyo Hridi Avarudhyate Atra Kritibihi Shushrushu Bistat Kshanat Dharma Projita Kaita Vatra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam. Lord Vyasadeva makes the position of Srimad Bhagavatam very clear in regards, in relation, in reference to all the other books compiled by him. Vyasadeva says, this Bhagavatam is not like the other books compiled by me, like the four Vedas, like the 108 Upanishads or Shrutis, like different Smritis, like 17 Puranas, like Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu Sahasranam, Vedanta Sutra, etc. Srimad Bhagavatam is very special. Srimad Bhagavad Gita sometimes talks about Nishkam Karma and sometimes about Jnana also. But Bhagavatam will never talk. And that is why Dharma Projita Kaitava Atra. Kaitava Dharma means cheating religion. Cheating religion means that religion or that activity which is not relating, which is not related to the actual constitutional position of the living entity. That dharma which is not swarupanubandhi. Swarupanubandhi means the function or the original nature of the living entity. Swarupanubandhi dharma means the original nature of the living entity. And the original nature of the living entity is to serve the Lord unconditionally. Jiver swarupa haya krishner nityadas. Krishner tatastha shakti bheda bheda prakash. This is what Mahaprabhu has given as the first instruction of his sermons to Sanatan Goswami in Kashi. This is the first statement he has given in his sermons to Sanatan Goswami, in his sermons, doctrine, in his instructions. So, Bhagavatam, one may say that, oh, Bhagavatam also talks about mukti or liberation. Because one of the 10 characteristics of Srimad Bhagavatam is mukti. Srimad Bhagavatam has 10 themes. 10 themes are described within Srimad Bhagavatam. In the 10th chapter, which is the last chapter of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the very first verse, Shukdev Goswami starts telling Parikshit Maharaj how many topics have been discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Shukdev Goswami says, Shri Shuka Uvacha Atra Sargo Visargascha Sthanam Poshana Mutayaha Manavantaresha Anukatha Nirodo Muktirashrayaha. Atra Sargo. Primary creation, secondary creation, visarga, and all these other themes have been discussed. And one of the themes is mukti. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam utayaha manavantareshanu katha nirodho muktihi ashrayaha. One of the topics that have been discussed in Bhagavatam is the topic of liberation, mukti. Now the question arises, the very second shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, dharma projita, etc., rejects the idea that even mukti is emphasized by Bhagavatam. The very second shloka of Bhagavatam rejects the idea, totally relinquishes, forsakes and abandons the idea that Bhagavatam ever talks about liberation. This idea is totally rejected by the very second shloka of Bhagavatam, very beginning. So how is it possible that mukti or liberation is one of the ten themes to be discussed in Bhagavatam? How is this possible? This is possible because Srimad Bhagavatam's definition of mukti is not the same as the definition of mukti given by jnanis, karmis, yogis and others. Srimad Bhagavatam's definition of mukti is the same as the prema bhakti discussed by Srila Rupa Goswami and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is why when Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya wanted to change and wanted to create and wanted to insert a mutation into the original statement of Srimad Bhagavatam by interpolating it, although that was in one way not improper act, it was proper, because Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya was completely imbued with pure devotional sentiment. After that he met Mahaprabhu, and after that he had 7 days of conversation with Mahaprabhu, and after that Mahaprabhu changed his impersonalistic conception and made him transformed into a pure devotee, and after that he saw Shadbhuj Rupa, sixfold form of Mahaprabhu in his house. He became a pure devotee. He started accepting Mahaprasadam as Chinmay, as transcendental, and not as product of mode of goodness. Mayavadis consider Mahaprasadam to be the product of mode of goodness, material. But he started considering it to be completely transcendental, above the three modes. He considered the holy name of the Lord to be not the faculty of mundane speech or voice. He considered to be the faculty of the internal potency, Ahladini Shakti. Mayavadis consider Krishna Naam, Hari Naam, Ram Naam, all the transcendental names of the Lord to be the products of the mode of goodness. This is not what Sarvabhaum accepted later on, because he was changed. And after that he became changed, he even, Chaitanya Charitamrita Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya used to cover his ears whenever he used to hear the word mukti being sung in Jagannath Puri, being uttered, being chanted, being recited, being spoken in the streets of Jagannath Puri. Whenever this mukti word was being recited, he used to cover his ears by his hands. Jai Jai, Jai Shri, Radha Kala Chand Ji Bhagwan Ki Jai. He used to cover his ears by putting his palm tops on the ears and used to just mimic or imitate artificially the position of a dumb person or a deaf person. Why? Because he rejected the idea of liberation as propounded by Gyan Marg, Karmis and Yogis. Because that's not the ultimate goal for the devotees. Liberation is not the ultimate goal. If the desire for liberation exists, then pure devotional service becomes adulterated. That is what we will learn later on in our seminar, how Rupa Goswami has defined pure devotional service. So Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya rather thought of changing the word Tatyanukampam susamikshamano bhungjana evam vipakam mukti pade sadaya bhak. This is the last word or the last phrase of that statement spoken by Lord Brahma unto Lord Krishna in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, when Brahma has stolen the cowherd boys and cows of Shri Krishna, and then later on he knows his mistake and he comes to apologize in front of the Lord. He prays the Lord in multifarious ways and he starts reciting many different shlokas, fully explaining the whole siddhanta, true conclusions. And one of the shlokas that he says in his prayers is Tatyanukampam susamikshamano bhungjana evatmakritam vipakam hridvagvapurbhir bhagavan namaste muktipade sadaya bhak. Muktipade sadaya bhak means a devotee of yours becomes eligible after performing your devotional service. He becomes eligible to attain liberation. Daya bhak means eligible, proprietor, hereditary proprietor. When father passes away, son is known as daya bhak according to the Chanakya Niti Shastra. When father passes away, the legal hereditary proprietor of the father's property is the son. So Chanakya Pandit has used the word Daya Bhak in his Arthashastra to mean the hereditary proprietor. So here also Daya Bhag means the hereditary proprietor. The devotee is the hereditary proprietor of mukti or liberation. But Sarvabhaum rejected the idea. He said, devotee's goal is not mukti, it is prema bhakti. How can you consider mukti to be the goal of a devotee? And how can Bhagavatam ever speak of mukti when it rejects the idea of dharma, artha, kam and mukti? How can it ever speak of mukti? Again, Bhagavatam cannot contradict its own self. So he changed the word and he rather annexed the word bhakti there. He changed the word mukti and he interpolated and he annexed the word bhakti. And although mukti there means the same as bhakti, so one can argue that what's the big difference if Sarvabhaum Bhattachari changes the word? What's the big difference? Rather, he makes the confusion or the perplexion go away by clarifying what the word mukti means in that particular context. By clarifying that mukti means bhakti here, and by changing the word mukti to bhakti, he has done what Vyasadeva left imperfect while writing. One can say like this, Sarvabhaum did everything okay. Because his view was devotional perspective, and it is said that even if a devotee performs a sin, normally a devotee does not perform sin. But now we are talking about pure devotees who have no desire of either mundane sense gratification or liberation. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi hridi vartate tavat bhakti sukhasyatra katham abhyudayo bhavet. Bhakti rasamrit Sindhu Rupa Goswami says, who has no desire of liberation and sense enjoyment. What to speak of actually engaging in sense gratification and liberation. One who is not inclusive of even the desires of sense enjoyment and liberation. That pure devotee of the Lord who has sole motive, sole objective of only satisfying the Lord unconditionally. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but in the mood of Radharani, he prays to Jagannath that Ashlishyava, if I, Radharani, am standing and you embrace me by your loving embrace, considering me to be your consort and you to be my beloved, then also I will serve you. First condition, first situation, in first circumstance. And in the second circumstance, padaratam pinashtumam. Or if you don't want to embrace me, who am your beloved, who am your maidservant, who am your priyasi, priyatama. If you don't want to embrace me, who is your lover, and if you want to rather trample me by just like an elephant, when an elephant tramples a person underneath his foot, in the same way, if you will trample me by stepping on my body and by trampling my body with your rough movements on my body, just like an elephant does. Padartam pinashtumam. Even in that condition, I will serve you unconditionally. Not being slightest unhappy. It's not that I will continue to serve, but in my mind, I will become unhappy. No. Even in that condition, even if you will trample me underneath your foot, I will start serving you both mentally and physically in the same way as if I would have served you when you would have embraced me in that situation. Ashlishyava padratam, pinashtumam, adarshanan. And in the third circumstance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, if you don't give me your darshan at all, and if you make me, who am your lover, broken hearted, by not giving me the opportunity of envisioning and beholding the most enchanting countenance of your transcendental appearance and form, even in that situation, even in that circumstance, I will be serving you in the same way, in the same above mentioned way. Yes. Ashlishyava padartam pinashtumam adarshanan marmahatam karotuva yatha tathava vidadhatu lampato. And suppose in the fourth circumstance, if you will appear in front of me, but in a different way, in an inimical mood, just in order to tease me, just like what the debauchees and the flirts do sometimes, just in order to tease me. Or according to the American slang, bug me. First I was thinking bug means that bug, insect. But it is American slang, not to be found within the British standard usage. So, according to the Oxford Dictionary, bug does not mean teasing. Bug means the insect bug. Anyways, so teasing. If you want to tease me, by as what the debauchees do, and you are the perfect ideal example of a debauchee, because you are always changing your love. Sometimes you are loving Chandravali. Sometimes you are loving myself. Sometimes you are loving some other gopis. And sometimes, and normally in Dwarka, you have no love concentrated for any one particular queen. You love all the 16,108. And what to speak of your conjugal love being divided into many parts. But your affection and your love for all the different types of devotees is also divided into many parts. Because all your pure devotees, they love you exclusively. Their object of love is none other than you, is only you, yourself. Yourself is the only object of their love. The love of all of your pure devotees, no matter whether they are in conjugal mood or Sakhya, Dasya, Shant or any other mood, any of the five relationships with Krishna. All the pure devotees in any of the five relationships, their love is only reposed towards one object, and that is Krishna. So they are ananya. They are exclusive in their love. They are chaste. But what to speak of your loving your devotees in conjugal relationship? Even your love with your devotees, even your affection with your devotees in other relationships and other moods is not considered chaste. Why? Because even in Sakhya, you have thousands of devotees serving you in Sakhya Bhav. You are the only goal of every individual devotee who is serving you as your friend. But for you, the Sakhya Priti, the fraternal love, is divided into the innumerable Sakhas. All the Sakhas, all the innumerable Sakhas, the objective of their love is only one, Krishna. But the objective of your love is not one, it's many. Because many devotees are serving one, but one is serving many. So the devotional love of the many serving one is unifold. But the affection of the one reciprocating with many is not unifold, it is manifold because of the quantity. And that is why not even your love in the conjugal relationship, your love in all the other relationships is not single-minded, it's not unifold, it's not just concentrated on one particular person. You are divided in your love. And that is why, Lampatova, yeah, you may try to embrace any other gopi in front of me. You may try to embrace or perform any types of other conjugal dalliances, erotic, aesthetic dalliances, surat krida, surat vyapar, ratik krida. You may try to perform these dalliances in front of me with other gopis. But even in that condition, I will serve you in the same way as I would serve you in the other three conditions. This is what we mean by the unmotivated love of the devotee. So, if a devotee is completely unmotivated in this way, and suppose he has no desire for Kanchan, Kamini, Kirti, Kaivalya and Kutinati. These are the four. These are the five. Kanchan means no desire for material opulence. Kirti means no desire for material fame, adoration, prestige, worship, respect, etc. Kamini, no desire for enjoying the senses with beautiful women and other such likewise things. That is Kamini. Kanchan, Kamini, Kirti. Kaivalya, no desire for attaining liberation. Kaivalya. And Kutinati, no hypocrisy or duplicity displayed in the behavior. If a devotee is freed of these five things, these five kas means these five kavarga. Kavarga means all of these five are starting with letter K. Kaivalya, Kutinati, Kamini, Kanchan and Kirti. If a person is freed from these five, the process is very simple. Then he is to be considered pure devotee. And that pure devotee of the Lord, who has single soul motive of satisfying the Lord, even if he accidentally, or suppose, even in a very pure stage, sometimes devotee seems to be performing some sinful activity. We are not talking about those devotees who have not attained the stage of perfection and who are not freed of these five things, Kanchan, Kamini, Kirti, etc. If they perform some sinful activity, that's not what we are talking about right now. We are talking about those devotees who always are devoid of these five things, Kanchan, Kamini, Kirti, etc. But even in their pure stage, sometimes some devotees are found performing some sinful activities. Then those sinful activities are not to be considered sinful activities at all. Because even while performing those seemingly so-called apparent sinful activities, their only motive is to satisfy the Lord, so they are not considered sinful at all. Because their motive is transcendental. Now, the question arises that Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, if for a pure devotee, even if a sin which is performed to satisfy the Lord is not to be considered sin, then for Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, who is changing this shloka, he is not actually doing a sin. He is just clarifying what Vyasadeva has not clarified. Then why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu objected to it? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to show that Bhagavatam has no mal, no contamination, no adulteration at all. And whatever Vyasadeva has written is perfectly fine without any need of clarification, without any need of change or interpolation. And that is why Mahaprabhu said that yes, once Vyasadeva has rejected the idea of mukti in the second shloka of Bhagavatam, Dharmah Projita, then it is not possible for the same Vyas, according to the common sense and simple logic, to again emphasize on mukti. That is why only to fools and rascals here mukti will appear as the mukti of jnanis and karmis and yogis. But to the wise, the word mukti here will certainly mean the same thing as prema bhakti. So there is no need to change. This is what Mahaprabhu said. Not bhakti padesa daya bhak. Just leave it as it is, mukti padesa daya bhak. So Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects the idea of dharma artha, kama and purushartha. And while interpreting the word projita, ujjita means rejecting. And pra means completely rejecting. Pra ujjita, projita. Pra and ujjita, when they combine, they become projita. Ujjita means rejecting and pra means completely, completely rejecting. So, Sridhara Swami, in commenting on that verse of Bhagavatam, he says, ujjita shabdena tu dharma artha kama iti purushartha trayasya parityago vidheya. He says that by saying projita or rejecting, Bhagavatam means rejection of dharma, artha and kama, these three. But by saying pra, Bhagavatam means that not only the rejection of dharma, artha and kama, but also the rejection of moksha. That is what we mean by complete rejection. Rejection, mere rejection of dharma, artha and kama would not mean complete rejection. Would mean only partial rejection. But rejection of liberation or mukti means complete liberation, rejection, and that is what we mean by projita. Prashabdena tu mokshabhi sandhirapi nirastaha. Even the desire for attaining moksha or liberation is rejected in Bhagavatam. That is why, because Bhagavatam rejects these kaitava dharma, these cheating propensities, the real constitutional function of the living entity, swarupanubandhi dharma, is to serve the Lord. Jivir Swarupai Krishnir Nitya Das. And the Bhagavatam's definition of mukti is the same as serving the Lord. The Bhagavatam's definition of mukti is Muktir Hitvanyatharupam Swarupena Vyavasthitihi. Bhagavatam's definition of mukti means that original position which is inherent to the constitutional position of the living entity. When living entity is again reinstated into its original position, that is mukti according to Bhagavatam. So, the original position of the living entity is Krishner Nitya Das, to serve the Lord. So, when living entity again is put into that position, that is mukti, that means prema bhakti. Because prema bhakti, you have no other business than to serve the Lord exclusively. So, prema bhakti and mukti mean the same according to Bhagavatam interpretation. But here in dharma, arth, kama and moksha does not mean the same as prema bhakti. So, Bhagavatam rejects the moksha or the mukti, which falls as a concomitant factor of dharma, arth and kama. The mukti which is counted as a concomitant factor of dharma, arth and kama, that mukti is rejected within Bhagavatam. The mukti or the liberation which simply makes one freed of vices and virtues, punya and pap. The mukti or liberation that makes a living entity simply freed from all the three types of material pains, adi daivik dukh, adhyatmik dukh, adi bhautik dukh. The mukti or liberation which simply frees a person from the results of four types of activities, prarabdha phal, aprarabdha phal, koot and bij. The mukti which makes living entity transcend the three modes of material nature, sattva, raja and tam, goodness, passion and ignorance. The mukti which ceases fourfold conditions, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age, disease. The mukti which ceases the circulation among the 8,400,000 species, that mukti is known as mukti which is to be rejected by Srimad Bhagavatam and which is to be rejected by pure devotees. But the mukti, which means the same as prema bhakti, and which also includes all these other things, like cessation of 8,400,000 different species and all the others, but only those without prema means the mukti to be rejected. And all those things along with prema bhakti means the real mukti that Bhagavatam talks about. And even though liberation from the material world even the devotees attain liberation, jnanis also become transcendental to the three modes of material nature after attaining liberation. And the devotees also after attaining liberation become transcendental to the three modes of material nature. But the devotees do not aspire after, even though they get the same result as the jnanis do. Jnanis also attain liberation, devotees also. But devotees along with liberation, they get prem. That is not what the jnanis get. They only get liberation. So, but even though the devotees, they get prem, and they also get liberation, they do not aspire after the liberation. They only aspire after prem. That's the difference. They get something for which they do not aspire for. That's what they get. And the mukti or liberation, devotees get as a side result, as a secondary result of sadhana bhakti. And prem or prema bhakti, devotees get as a primary result of sadhana bhakti. Why secondary result? Because devotees never aspire after mukti, but still they get mukti because the Lord is kind on them. But jnanis, they aspire after mukti, they do not aspire after prem, and they get only mukti. That's the difference. So, Bhagavatam rejects the whole idea, and Bhagavatam is amal praman, evidence without contamination. All the other books written by Vyasadev prior to Bhagavatam have little contamination. They have, if they do not have contamination, then at least they have semblance of contamination, reflection of contamination, and or the shadow of contamination. Chaya abhas. Mal abhas, mal chaya, mal pratibimb. Reflection, shadow, or semblance of contamination they have, if they do not have contamination. But Srimad Bhagavatam does not even have semblance, reflection, or shadow of contamination. That is why it is amal praman, fully devoid of contamination, fully devoid of dharma, arth, kama and moksha, in short. Only stating the real auspicious, only talking about the real auspicious item for the welfare of the living beings. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam. Keval vastav vastu is being described here. Not a vastav, not false things, not temporary things. Only the real objective, prema bhakti, is being described here in Bhagavatam. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Garud Puran, Vyasdeva states that Arthoyam Brahma Sutranam Bharatarthavi Nirnayaha Gayatri Bhashya Rupasau Vedartha Paribrimhitaha Purananam Samarupaha Sakshad Bhagavatoditaha. Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary of the Brahma Sutras, explanation of the Brahma Sutras, Vedanta. Arthoyam Brahma Sutranam Bharatarthavi Nirnayaha. It is explanation of Mahabharata, Gayatri Bhashya. It is explanation of the mother of the four Vedas, that is the Brahma Gayatri Mantra, Gayatri Bhashya, Vedartha Paribrimhitaha. It is explanation of the four Vedas. Purananam Samarupaha. It is just like Sama Ved among all the Puranas, crest jewel of all the Puranas. Sakshad Bhagavatoditaha, and it has been directly spoken by the Lord's mouth. So this Srimad Bhagavatam, which possesses such unique characteristics as no other scripture written by any other sage, demigod or Vyasadeva possesses, and that is why it is known as Amal Praman, purest type of evidence. Another reason is because Vyasadeva wrote Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, Vishnu Sahasranam, four Vedas, Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Puranas, everything, but he was not satisfied only until he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. He became fully satisfied in such a way that he put his pen down forever. He did not write any other scripture. And that is why whatever Srimad Bhagavatam states is the final decision. And Srimad Bhagavatam states, Bhaktyaham ekaya grahyaha. Now this we will start discussing tomorrow. What Srimad Bhagavatam states and how what Srimad Bhagavatam states is different from the conception of Shankaracharya. What the conception of Shankaracharya in relation to bhakti, how that is different from the conception of Srimad Bhagavatam about bhakti, and how the conception of Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya and other Vaishnavacharyas about bhakti is also different from the conception of Bhagavatam, and how only the conception of Srila Rupa Goswami about bhakti is matching the actual conception of Srimad Bhagavatam. This will be shown everything tomorrow. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Because we have crossed the time, so we will stop now. Tomorrow, same time, 7 to 9. Hare Krishna.